Reignite on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. We know that your focus is on your business. That's why ours is on supporting you.
Welcome back to Reignite. Now, how many times have you ended up in a heated debate with a taxi driver or with your friends in a pub and declared only in Ireland because of maybe some siloed thinking or budget overruns or deadline blowouts happening on a project? The list is long. Here's just a few examples.
The cost of the National Children's Hospital could top €2 billion. The head of the hospital's board told the Oireachtas Health Committee further delays and even higher costs could occur.
1973, the Sydney Opera House finally opened after running way over budget and schedule.
Some say it's wonderful, others think it's dreadful.
Spending on school and hospital buildings across the country has run over budget dozens of times since 2010.
Now, one person who has spent years trying to understand why the vast majority of mega projects, like those that we've just heard, don't meet their budgets or deadlines is Oxford University Professor Ben Flubier, who recently published a new book called How Big Things Get Done, The Surprising Factors That Determine the Fate of Every Project, from home renovations to space exploration and everything in between. Professor Flubier, you're an economic geographer by training. Why did you start building the database of big projects globally? I think it now runs to 16,000 projects.
Well, I was just looking around and seeing what's happening in society. I was living in Denmark at the time. Denmark was building the longest suspension bridge in the world at the time when it was completed, and the second longest underwater rail tunnel, second only to the Channel Tunnel between the UK and France. And these projects had delays and cost overruns, big ones. I just wondered, is that normal or not? Because it seemed like either the Danes were unlucky with these projects or they were incompetent. And there actually was no data. And this is exactly what a scholar loves, you know. There's a wide area on the map and you actually get to map it out and find the knowledge, you know, that can fill in that wide area. So that's why I started collecting data. I just wanted to know, is it normal to see such bad performance as we were seeing on the first mega projects in Denmark?
I think a lot of Irish people are going to be heartened listening to you this morning, Professor, because this is a question we constantly pose here in Ireland. Is this unique to the Irish sensibility and lack of planning, or is this a global phenomenon?
So first of all, I can reassure the Irish that we have 136 nations in our database, including Ireland. And Ireland is neither better or worse than other nations. Every nation thinks they are the worst. And this, we find that over and over. We have huge cost overruns. We have huge delays. We must be terrible at this, particularly terrible. But actually, you're just as terrible as everybody else. There's no difference in that sense. That's the truth. The specific numbers are that only 0.5% of projects, of those 16,000 plus projects in our database, only 0.5% is both on budget, on schedule, and on the benefits that they promised. 0.5%, you know, it's incredible. We couldn't believe the number when we first started uncovering it, and we went out collecting more data. That's one reason the database is so big. We wanted to make sure that this was not a spurious thing because of the data, that we just happened to have biased data. And now we have other colleagues that have started to study the same thing. They find similar results. So this is pretty solid, you know, that, and we call it actually the iron law: over budgets, over schedule, under benefits, over and over again.
It is just extraordinary. 99.5% of big projects fail to deliver on the core promises set out on time and budget. And I'm sure people listening can think of projects through the years. You know, Scotland's Parliament, we've enough of them here in Ireland.
So you already mentioned the Scottish Parliament building. So that's one of the largest cost overruns in the UK, as far as I remember, around 900%. That's a lot. Hey, but the Sydney Opera House is 1,400%, so even larger. The Suez Canal, 1,900%. And we have IT projects. Actually, IT project is the worst type of project. They have the worst performance, and they are even higher than what I've just talked about, so several thousands of percent. So it's actually too easy to find failures. And therefore, I made an effort to look at successes also, because it becomes kind of tiring to keep pointing out all the failures. We need to learn from our failures, but we also need to learn from successes. And luckily, there actually are successful projects out there. There are people and there are organizations who know how to do this.
So what is it? Is it just a lack of, at the beginning, starting with the why, starting with the problem definition and taking your time to absolutely define it rather than taking a shovel and feeling good about we've turned the sod, we're up and running?
That's a major thing. So we very clearly show this in the book, that people don't stop and think, why do we want to do this? What is the best way to do it? And then take the time to actually go through every detail, sort of simulate the project before you actually go out and build it. And today, that's typically you simulate the project on a computer. And if you build the thing on the computer first, you will have much less risk when you build it in reality. So that's what we recommend. And that's what we see the successful people doing and the majority of people not doing. They race to getting the shovels in the ground. People love to talk about, you know, like start digging. That's about the dumbest approach you can take to a project. We have we call it a heuristic. It's really a leadership principle. Think slow, act fast. So you need to think slow in the beginning in order to be able to act fast in the end. What actually happens on the majority of projects is the exact opposite. So people rush the project to a start, but that doesn't mean that the problems that are in the project have disappeared, right? It just means they show up later. And that's when it's really inconvenient and very expensive. And it slows down the whole project, which is why you get to act slow and you get these cost blowouts, because time is money. Many of the problems that we see with projects are caused by human psychology and human power. So psychology and power are the two root causes, we call it, of the behavior we see on projects. And of course, this is not behavior that we only take on as human beings when we do projects. If we're optimistic, we're optimistic, and we're optimistic about anything we come across, you know, including projects.
And why is it that we still haven't learned from each other's mistakes? Is it going to take your database now of the 16,000 projects for us to start seeing the patterns and the themes that we all do better at the start and stop repeating the mistakes that probably others have made through the decades?
That helps a lot, you know, and it's already happening. So there are actually a lot of organizations, and that's both in business and in government, that are now beginning to pick up on this and that are using our data, you know, in order to get a better grip on what is it that's going on. The answer is not only in the data. We also need to look inside ourselves in order to come to grips with our biases, both the psychological biases and the power biases. So power bias is jockeying for position, trying to deliberately manipulate your project so it's likely to get funding and so on, whereas psychological biases are unconscious. They just happen to us. We're hardwired with them. So we need to look at those biases, and we need to acknowledge that they're there. I usually put it this way. I tell people, your biggest risk is yourself. So the risk is not out there. It's not because of things that are happening in the external environment. Is because you are misinterpreting and misunderstanding what is happening in the external environment. So you are your own biggest risk. We need to take that on board. And then we also need to understand the data. And we need to have governance structure that is conducive to delivering successfully. We need to have the right incentives so people get rewarded if they have the right behavior, and they get punished if they have the wrong behavior.
What would those incentives look like?
You need to have both the stick and the carrots. Today, there's mainly the stick when you look at projects. So people get punished if they don't deliver what they promised. You're better off if you also have a carrot. People actually like to be able to produce extra positive results. So let's say you deliver ahead of schedule or you deliver under budget. They get paid extra. They make more money if they perform better. And they make less money if they perform worse. So you need a symmetrical incentive structure where there's both gains and losses. And today we have a one-sided incentive structure that focuses mainly on punishment, so losses.
You believe also, in terms of creating a different mindset and a different approach, there is a world-famous architect and an Oscar-winning movie studio that have a lot in common that we actually could all learn from.
We have combed the world to see who are the really, really, not just really, but really, really successful project leaders in the world. And we found them in interesting places in addition to construction and, the usual places. So one was in Pixar, the animation movie maker that is owned by Disney. And the other was in Frank Gehry's architectural studio. We picked their brains, you know, interviewed them, looked at their project, analyzed the data and so on. And it did several in-depth interviews. What they do right is that they really take time up front. So Pixar will actually simulate a film 9 times before they actually start shooting it. So they really know what they're doing when they start, you know, using the expensive computers and hiring in the expensive actors for the voiceovers and by that time, they've already done the movie many, many times on paper, on storyboards, and on computers. Gary actually uses exactly the same methodology. He simulates the building. He has a special piece of software called CATIA. Today, the more general term is building information modeling. Other people are just catching up now. So he's the pioneer, and he's really benefited from this. His business has benefited from it. His clients have benefited from it. Because he's able to simulate his buildings on the computer and do all sorts of funny twists and turns, as anybody who has seen a Gary building will know. So he actually knows how far can he push a building before it falls over, because he has this model. And then he builds the whole thing on the computer, which means that he knows exactly what the budget is. He knows exactly what the parts are that needs to get on, not the construction side, but the assembly side. So the buildings are being assembled much more than they are being constructed. We need to get to the assembly sides and get rid of the construction side. And not until we do that will we bring construction into the 20th century, not even the 21st century. They're still stuck in the 19th century. And they really need to get to this assembly side in order to become modern.
I imagine people listening to you will say, that makes a ton of sense, having lots of time to do those simulations, really fall in love with the problem you're trying to solve. What would you say to people, finally, given what you've learned about the mistakes, final advice to people in terms of the think slow but act fast movement?
I would say get another boss. You know? I mean, there's really...
And if that's not an option?
No, it is. It's very often an option. I mean, I have this question all the time. So I've had thousands of students through this at Oxford and in Copenhagen. And, you know, I get this question all the time. I said, just get another boss, you know, and if you can't find one, I'll get you one. And, you know, the bosses are actually in the weaker position today because talent is a scarce resource, and especially in project management, there's a real lack of talent. So if you're good, you can get a job. I guarantee it. By the way, it's a great profession to get into from that point of view. If anybody's listening, they're looking for a new profession. If you want to be assured of a job and you're good, you can count on it if you choose this profession for a living.
That is great career advice. Thank you so much, Professor Flubier, for joining us here on Reignite.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
And the book again is How Big Things Get Done. And that's it for this week. Thanks to our guests and the crew. I'm Áine Kerr, and that was Reignite.